Well, it's great to be back with you again in our Credo course on the book of Revelation. And last time we just kind of gave a little bit of the background information on the book and talked about the occasion of the book and talked a little bit about the purpose of the book, why it was written. And again, remember we said that the book of Revelation is, the purpose of it is to give the advanced history of how Jesus Christ through judgment ultimately becomes king with a view towards producing faithfulness and godliness in our lives. So that's the great purpose and the grand purpose, I believe, of this book. Now, one of the big background issues in the book of Revelation that you have to discuss and take some time to discuss are the different approaches to the timing of the fulfillment of this book. You begin to read through the book of Revelation, and really one of the big issues is, when are these events fulfilled? Is the book of Revelation talking about future events? Is it talking about events that are happening now? Is it talking about things that happened in the past? Now, there's almost universal agreement among commentators and scholars about Revelation chapters 1 to 3. Revelation chapter 1 is this vision that John sees on the island of Patmos of the resurrected radiant Christ. Chapters 2 and 3 are these letters to these seven churches that existed back in John's day. When you get to chapter 4 and following, that's where the issue comes in of when are these events going to be fulfilled? And there are four main approaches of the timing of the fulfillment of the events in the book of Revelation. Now, let me just say this kind of up front. I don't want to confuse. Hopefully this will clarify more than confuse. But there are four main views that give us the framework of when this book is fulfilled. And I'll just mention those for you. That's the preterist view, the historicist view, the idealist view, and the futurist view. So those are your basic framework. When you study the book of Revelation, every person that studies it is either going to be a preterist, they're going to be a historicist, they're going to be an idealist, or they're going to be a futurist. Or there's one other view called the eclectic view that kind of just mixes them all together. Some people have that, hold that idea. So there's your view of the overall framework of the book. Then there's a second issue, and that is your view of the millennium. A lot of you have heard the term amillennial or postmillennial or premillennial. That issue really determines when is the millennium, the reign of Christ, when is that being fulfilled? So the big, you know, preterist, historicist, idealist, futurist, that's when's the whole book being fulfilled. Then you move to your view of the millennium, which is when is the millennial reign or the messianic kingdom of Jesus Christ being fulfilled. That's kind of your next point you have to make. And then the third issue is the timing of the rapture. And there are 3 to 4 to 5 main views on the timing of the rapture. Of when will the rapture occur, that is the catching away of God's saints in relation to the events of the tribulation. So you can see all three of these issues have to do with timing. When are the events of Revelation fulfilled? When will the millennium occur? And when will the rapture of the church occur in relation to the tribulation period? So you got to get those three issues figured out. And I'll tell you up front here, I'm a futurist and I'm a premillennialist and I believe in pre-trib rapture. So it kind of pigeonholes me. I've even kind of figured out where I'm coming from. But let's look at these views and understand what each of them say and the strengths and weaknesses of them. The preterist view views the events of Revelation as past. The word preter is the Latin word means past. So preterists view most of the book, those are called partial preterists, or all of the book, those are called full preterists, as being fulfilled in the first century with the fall of the city of Jerusalem in 70 AD. And those who hold the preterist view then maintain the book of Revelation was written in the mid-60s AD. Because obviously, if the book of Revelation is a prophecy, which it is, and it's prophesying the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, then the book of Revelation had to be written before that time. It had to be written in the mid-60s. Now, there are two kinds of preterists. There are what are called full or hyper or extreme or orthodox, or they like to call themselves consistent preterists. They believe that all of the prophecies, including the second coming and the resurrection of believers, are past events. So they believe that now we are living now in the new heaven and the new earth, which is rather depressing to me if this is the new heaven and new earth. But that's what full preterists believe. They believe that the second coming has passed. That was 70 AD. Jesus came through the Romans to destroy the city of Jerusalem. That was his coming. The resurrection has already occurred. That's a spiritual resurrection as people come to know the Lord. And so full or hyper or extreme preterists believe that all prophecy has been fulfilled. Now, according to full preterists, we are beyond the millennium. We're presently in the new heavens and the new earth. And they would say if there is an end to history, it's not revealed in the Bible. Now, the problem to me with full preterism is heresy. Now, I would say, I would maybe put a small H. I'm not saying if someone's a full preterist, they don't know the Lord. But what I'm saying is it's heretical as far as the fundamentals of the faith. Let me just say this kind of up front here a little bit to help us grasp this. There are four pillars to an orthodox eschatology. Eschatology refers to the view of end times or last things. There's four things that Christians throughout church history have held about eschatology or Bible prophecy. The first one is we all believe in a visible, physical, literal return of Jesus Christ to the earth. If you're a Christian, you believe that. So that's all the creeds of the church, we believe that. We also believe in bodily resurrection, that believers and unbelievers will someday be resurrected and receive a body. We all believe in a final judgment, and we all believe in a literal heaven and hell. Those things are clear. So I always like to say, if you're a believer in Jesus Christ and your eschatology should include the return of Jesus, the resurrection of the body, final judgment, heaven and hell. What we discuss and we debate and we argue about are all the things around those four events. But here's the problem. For full preterists, they don't believe in a literal visible return of Christ or a bodily resurrection or a final judgment to come. So their eschatology is not an orthodox eschatology. It's outside the pale of orthodoxy. So I think that view is a view that should be rejected by all believers. Now, there's another view of moderate preterism, or called partial preterism, and partial or moderate preterists believe that the tribulation period and the majority of biblical prophecies were fulfilled in the events surrounding 70 AD. That the book of Revelation is about the time of 67 to 70 AD when the Jewish war was going on in the land of Israel, culminating in the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. But moderate or partial preterists still believe there will be a literal second coming, a literal resurrection in the future, and a final judgment. So they're orthodox in that way. They believe that the very end of the book of Revelation is about that. So that's moderate or partial preterism. I like this graphic here. You see the people carrying the signs around that say the end is near. This guy's carrying the sign, relax, it all happened in AD 70. So that would be the preterist view. It's all happened in AD 70. Now, one thing that I want to mention here that I think is important when we talk about this issue of preterism is, why is preterism kind of gaining a following? Why is preterism gaining? If you get on the internet, you can find thousands and thousands of websites devoted to this preterist view. And preterism is gaining a following. I'll just mention these six reasons. These are just ones I've observed. They're not based on any kind of research or anything. But one is, I think there has been a departure from consistent literal interpretation of the Bible. And I think that's helped give rise to preterism. Also, most futurists don't know what they believe and why. So a lot of people who are futurists or claim to be futurists, they hear somebody come along who's a really well-educated preterist, and they're easy prey to convince to leave their futurism. Thirdly, some people are naturally attracted to views that are against the status quo. Now, I'm not saying all preterists fall into this category, but there is a sense with some people, and we've all met people who kind of like to go against the status quo. They want something new and something different, and they've heard the book of Revelation interpreted futuristically, and then they hear about this preterism, and they're kind of drawn to something that's new and something that's different. Another reason a lot of people are moving to preterism is some very articulate, influential individuals are actively promoting that view. R.C. Sproul is a partial preterist, a good man, great theologian, but he's very influential. Hank Hanegraaff is a partial preterist, and many others who are kind of promoting this view. Another reason a lot of people are going to this is a lot of people are tired of the sensationalism and the date setting and the false predictions of some futurists. And I am a futurist in my view of the book of Revelation, but I always like to say sometimes we're harmed as badly by our friends as we are by our foes. You know, it's people within our own camp who say foolish things that really give futurism a black eye. And then I think one of the other reasons preterism is gaining a following is the emphasis on timing statements and reader relevance. We'll talk about this later, but at the very beginning of the book of Revelation, he says there in chapter 1, these things must shortly take place. And then the end of verse 3, he says, for the time is near. Well, preterists say, well, look, if the time is near and these things are going to shortly take place, how could this be about events that haven't even happened yet? You know, 2,000 years in the future. They point to these statements and say, whatever the book of Revelation is about, it has to be about something that was near to the time when the book was written. So they say it was written in about 65 AD. It was a prophecy about events surrounding the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. And also they point to reader relevance. They say, look, if you're a futurist and these events didn't happen for 2,000 years after they were written, how in the world was that relevant to the original audience? You people are reading this book and these events are so far in the future. How did that relate to them? Well, obviously, the way I would answer that is that the people reading the book didn't know when these events were going to occur. They could have occurred at any time. Also, if you go back to look at prophecies in the Old Testament, like the prophecies in Isaiah of the coming Messiah, he's going to be born of a virgin in Isaiah chapter 7. That wasn't fulfilled for 700 years. And Jesus, you'd say, well, how is that relevant to the original audience? Well, they didn't know when the Messiah was coming. So I think those arguments can be answered. The other thing is you can't fit all the details of Revelation 6 through 19 into the time of the Jewish war. I don't think using a consistent hermeneutic that you can do that. And here's the other thing, and we'll talk about this in our next session, is the date of the book of Revelation is the Achilles heel for preterism. They have to date the book in the mid-60s AD. And we're going to see that the book actually was written much later than that. If the book of Revelation is a prophecy about events happening in 70 AD and the years leading up to that, then it had to be written before that time. So if Revelation's written after 70 AD, preterism can't be true. And that's really the Achilles heel of that view, and we'll talk about that next time. The second main view of the book of Revelation is the historicist view, and that sees the events in Revelation as being fulfilled in the present. So preterists see it, either all of it or most of it, as past. Historicists say, no, it's happening in the present. The book of Revelation is a panorama of church history from the time of the apostles until the second coming of Jesus. This view was common with some of the reformers. They saw, you know, the papacy or the pope as being the Antichrist. In other words, they were seeing these events being fulfilled in their own time. Now, here's the problem. Some people that claim to be futurists really are historicists as well, because they're always trying to see all these prophecies being fulfilled in our day. Historicism, again, was very popular among some of the reformers, but the real problem with historicism for me is there's not a consistency of interpretation. It's kind of each generation of people when they live just kind of interpret the events as happening during their period of time, and there's no consistency at all through church history among historicists of what the events in the book in Revelation mean. And to me, that's the main weakness of the historicist view. There's just no consistency, nothing even close to consistency of interpretation. Another view, and this probably, I would say today, and again, this isn't based on a poll or anything like that, but just the reading that I do, I would say probably the most common view today, the most widely held view among scholars is called the idealist view. And this is the view that the book of Revelation is timeless. So again, preterists see it as past, historicists see it as present, idealists say, no, the book really is timeless. And so to them, to idealists, the book of Revelation envisions a depiction of the battle between the church and the world at all times in church history. So there's not a real concrete meaning to many of the symbols. So if you read a commentary by an idealist, almost every image you see in the book is related to the church. For instance, the 144,000 in Revelation chapter 7, that's the church. The woman over in chapter 12, that's the church. And it's always the church versus the forces of evil that are in the world at that given time. And so the idealist view is a very, very popular view among those who are in Reformed circles. It's all the book really is about the church throughout church history. They take the 1260 days, the 42-month time period that's mentioned through the book of Revelation, which is actually a 3.5-year period. They take that to just be symbolic of the entire church age. So it's very, very symbolic type interpretation, and they don't really give much concrete meaning to the symbols in the book. Again, it's kind of good versus evil, the church versus the world, the church versus the world system. That's kind of the main thing that they see. And they don't really try with a lot of the symbols that are given here to come up with a concrete meaning to them. Now, part of the problem for me with that interpretation is, we'll talk about this in a later session a little bit when we talk about interpreting the book of Revelation. But one of the problems is, I think Jesus gives us in chapter 1, I call it the golden key to how to interpret the book of Revelation. And that is, remember in chapter 1, Jesus is standing there in the middle of seven lampstands, and he holds seven stars in his right hand. When you get down to the end of the chapter, Jesus says, those seven lampstands are the seven churches. And the seven stars in my right hand are the seven angels or the seven messengers of those churches. So what Jesus is saying there is, these symbolic things you see refer to something that is literal. So in other words, the lampstands aren't just a symbol of nothing or just a symbol of a symbol. They have a concrete meaning. And what Jesus is telling us there, I think, is when you see a symbol in the book of Revelation, you are to look for the referent or the thing that's literal that that symbol refers to. And oftentimes with the idealist view, what I find is they're not finding with these symbols a referent or the literal thing that it refers to. It's just kind of a symbol of a symbol, which really then really has the idea of you kind of lose the meaning, I think, of what's intended there. But this is a very common view today, the idealist view. Now, the view that I hold is the futurist view. That's the view that we're going to take through this credo course on the book of Revelation. The futurist view simply says this: Revelation 4 through 22 is describing real people and events who are yet to appear on the world scene at the end of history. So it's real people, it's real events that are yet to appear on the scene at the end of world history. Now, I've given the weaknesses of the other view. Let me give the weakness of the futurist view. What a lot of people will say about the futurist view, again, is they will say, look, there was no immediate fulfillment of these things. You know, John says here that these things are soon, they're near, and yet, they still haven't even happened yet. This is so far off into the future. How could this have been an immediate fulfillment? Well, we're going to talk about that when we get into chapters 1 to 3, because I believe the terms there, these things must shortly take place or the time is near, these events refer more to the idea of imminency. That is, that they can occur at any time. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's shortness of time when they will occur. Because again, as we're going to find out, the problem is, to take the preterist view and have those events happen shortly, you got to go date the book in the mid-60s, which I think is very problematic. Again, the other issue, like I said, is reader relevance. People will say, well, if the book of Revelation is describing real events and real people that are yet to appear on the world scene, how was that relevant to people back in the first century? And again, the way it was relevant to them is they didn't know when these events were going to happen. These events, as far as they understood, could break in at any time. And then people living in the second century would read the book and say, wow, this could happen in our time. And people in the third century and so on. And when we read it today, we say these events could break in at any time and history could come to its culmination. So that's the way I think it has a relevance to us. The strengths of this view, to me, of the futurist view, are that it gives concrete meaning to the symbols within the book. Again, as you go through the book and you see these symbols, you see, for instance, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. I believe it's hard to go back in history and find a fulfillment for those events in past history. You go to Revelation chapter 13 to the beast that's mentioned there, and The number of his name is 666, and you people have to take the mark on the right hand of the forehead. Again, if you give concrete meaning to those symbols, nothing like that has happened in history. And of course, if you go to chapter 19, which I take as the second coming of Jesus Christ back to earth, nothing like that has happened in human history. I think to me it's a real stretch to say that Revelation chapter 19 is talking about the coming of Jesus through the Roman army in 70 AD to destroy Jerusalem, as preterists do. Another strength of the futurist interpretation, and this is something that gives me comfort as a Bible interpreter, this was the view of the early church. The early church took a futurist view of the book of Revelation. They took it futuristically. When you read Irenaeus and Justin Martyr and Victorinus and others in the early church, they took the events of the book of Revelation futuristically. And that gives me a comfort in being a futurist. Also to me, and this isn't an argument, a strong argument I would use, but to me, the book of Genesis tells us how everything got here. And it just makes sense to me that God would tell us in the last book of the Bible how everything ends. And in fact, when you get to the end of the book of Revelation, everything does come full circle from the book of Genesis. You have everything beginning in a garden. It ends in this beautiful garden city. You have the rivers flowing through the Garden of Eden. You have rivers flowing through this heavenly city. You have the tree of life in the Garden of Eden. You have the tree of life reappearing again. So it seems to me that the book of Revelation is giving us the culmination, the consummation of human history. So these are the four main views of how you interpret the book of Revelation. The preterist view that either all or most of the book was fulfilled before 70 AD. That the coming of Jesus was his coming in 70 AD to destroy the city of Jerusalem. The historicist view, the book of Revelation is being fulfilled through church history between his first and his second coming. The idealist view, there's really not a historical fulfillment per se or concrete meaning to the different events. It's just the ongoing struggle throughout this age between the church and the world. So it's timeless. And then the futurist view, the chapters 4 through 22 are in the future, describing real events, real people yet to appear on human history. Now, as I said, these are the four views: past, present, timeless, or future. Then there's what's called the eclectic view that combines all four of these views together. And there's a commentary by a man named Greg Beale that he takes what's called this eclectic view, kind of trying to bring all of these together, kind of a harmonizing type view. So as I said earlier, to study Revelation, you've got to get your main framework down. Which one of these views do you take? How are you going to view the timing of these events? When are they going to be fulfilled? Then your second interpretive decision in your eschatology is, what's your view of the millennium, the timing of the millennium? Is the millennium going on now? Is the thousand-year reign of Christ taking place now in a spiritual kingdom? Or is it going to take place in the future, literally on the earth? And then you have your view about the timing of the rapture. Is it going to happen before the tribulation, the middle of the tribulation, or the end? So what you can see from all of this is the main issue in interpreting the book of Revelation and the end times, it's issues of timing. That's really the main area of disagreement. Preterists say, look, it's already happened. Historicists say, no, it's happening now. Idealists say, no, it's timeless. And futurists say, no, this is all in the future. When you come to the millennium, amillennialists and postmillennialists, they say the kingdom is happening right now. It's not a literal thousand years. It's just a long time. And Christ is seated on the throne in heaven and reigning in our hearts. So it's happening now. And whereas premillennialists say, no, that the kingdom's in the future. It's a literal, earthly, thousand-year reign of Christ on the earth. And then when you come to the topic of the rapture, pre-tribbers say, we're going to be raptured before the tribulation. Mid-tribbers say, no, it's at the middle. Post-tribbers say, no, it's at the end. So all of these issues are related to timing. The view that I'm going to take as we go through our study of Revelation together again is the futurist, premillennial, pre-tribulation rapture view. And so I see Revelation as describing four great ages. Chapters 1 to 3 describe the church age that we're in now. And we don't know how many years it is. It isn't over yet. Chapters 4 through 19 are describing the tribulation age, that coming seven-year time, that 70th week of Daniel described in Daniel 9:27. Chapter 20 of Revelation describes the kingdom age that will last 1,000 years, and Revelation 21 and 22 describe the eternal age, which obviously is endless in years. So those are the four ages of Revelation: the church age, the tribulation age, then there's going to be the kingdom age, then there's going to be the eternal age. So that's the framework we're going to use as we go through the book of Revelation. What I want to do, though, as well, when we come to different problem passages, is give the different views of these and discuss the different alternatives. And we'll talk a lot more about the millennium when we get to chapter 20, verses 1 through 6. We'll talk in detail there about amillennialism, postmillennialism, premillennialism, the different arguments are in favor of those various views. So we'll talk a lot more about the millennium when we get to chapter 20. But what I wanted to do in this lesson here this morning is just kind of lay out for you the basic frameworks and the basic views that people have about prophecy. Again, let's go back and remember, though, that in Orthodox eschatology, we all believe Jesus is coming back. We believe there's going to be a resurrection. We believe there's going to be a judgment. We believe there's a heaven and hell. Those are the things we agree on. Those are the pillars of a biblical eschatology. And so we want to talk about these other things and discuss them with one another. But those are the things that we need to hold if we're going to be Orthodox in our eschatology. So what we'll do next time is we're going to pick up with the date of the book of Revelation. There's no book in the New Testament where the date is more debated and where the date is more important to understanding the interpretation of the book. So we'll pick up there next time by looking at the date of the book of Revelation when it was written.